The term flesh-eating bacteria was coined by the British media in 1994. During this time, a handful of necrotizing fasciitis cases in Gloucester, England, caused public hysteria, thanks to media headlines such as, "Killer bug ate my face." Meanwhile, public health officials fought to contain the spread of panic by communicating that necrotizing fasciitis, further referred to as a galloping gangrene in the media, was an uncommon yet well-known life-threatening manifestation of Group A Streptococcus bacteria. Today, our patient has necrotizing fasciitis, and you are the doctor. Welcome to The Internet Work, a podcast made by medical residents meant to serve you better on the wards and on call. Today's episode is entitled Galloping Gangrene, an approach to necrotizing fasciitis. Let's start with our minute physiology. The skin is our largest organ with several essential functions, namely immunity, hormonal regulation, pain and temperature sensation, and of course, protection. It protects us against UV light, mechanical injury, and microorganisms, to name a few, and does this through three main layers. The first is the epidermis, the outermost layer of our skin. Beneath the epidermis is the dermis, which contains our nerve supply, blood vessels, connective tissue, and lymphatics. Lastly, we have the subcutaneous tissue containing fat and fascia. Beneath this third layer of the skin is our deeper fascial layer that overlies muscle. While our common cellulitis involves the layer of the dermis, it is here within the superficial and deep fascial planes that necrotizing fasciitis will strike. Let's go through some definitions. Necrotizing fasciitis is a life-threatening bacterial skin and soft tissue infection that causes necrosis of subcutaneous fat and fascia. Because it extends along fascial planes, it causes widespread tissue destruction that can extend from the epidermis to underlying muscles. It can spread like wildfire in mere hours, so prompt diagnosis, antibiotic therapy, and surgical debridement are key to containing the infection. Often, it starts from a break in the skin. This could be an insect bite, abrasion, surgical procedure, or penetrating trauma that allows for bacterial entry into the body. Less commonly, non-penetrating soft tissue injuries such as muscle strains or contusions can be a predisposing factor to developing necrotizing fasciitis. When there's no obvious site of bacterial entry, it's referred to as cryptogenic necrotizing fasciitis. Necrotizing fasciitis can be classified into types based on the offending organism. Type 1 refers to polymicrobial necrotizing infections that involve a combination of gram-positive organisms such as Staph aureus or Strep pyogenes, gram-negative organisms such as E. coli or Pseudomonas, and anaerobic organisms such as Bacteroides. This type is seen more frequently in patients with diabetes, with ulcers or abscesses, who are immunocompromised, who use IV drugs, and who have undergone surgical procedures. Fournier's gangrene is an example of a type 1 infection and is the name given to necrotizing fasciitis that affects the patient's perineum, perianal, or genital region. Type 2 necrotizing fasciitis refers to infections caused by a single organism, most commonly Strep pyogenes, with a close second being Staph aureus. This type of neck fasc can occur in healthy individuals with few to almost no predisposing factors. Type 3 necrotizing fasciitis also involves monomicrobial infections, but is specifically reserved for infections caused by either 1, the Clostridium species, which are gram-positive anaerobes often contracted from penetrating or crushing trauma, 2, Vibrio vulnificus, a gram-negative organism typically acquired following saltwater trauma, and 3, Aeromonas hydrophila, another gram-negative organism contracted following freshwater trauma. All right, let's talk about the approach. Our approach to necrotizing fasciitis first begins with recognizing that it is a diagnosis made by clinical judgment, based on history, examination, and the patient's signs and symptoms. Investigations like imaging and blood work can enhance your suspicion of neck fasc, but waiting for their results should not delay treatment, as this is a medical emergency. Begin your patient encounter by noting their vitals, as patients with neck fasc often present hemodynamically unstable. Note any vital derangements consistent with sepsis, such as fever, tachycardia, and hypotension. They may be tachypneic due to acidosis and have evidence of end organ damage, such as an altered level of consciousness. These patients need a monitored setting as they may require a secured airway, supplemental oxygen, and good IV access for fluids and vasopressors. If you're able to get a history either from the patient or a collateral, it's important to clarify the onset of symptoms. Fever, malaise, pain, swelling, and skin changes are often experienced by the patient. Don't forget to ask about nausea, vomiting, and diarrhea, which can be early manifestations of toxemia from Group A strep. Ask specific questions regarding any recent surgeries or procedures, cuts or abrasions, water exposure, known ulcers on the skin, animal exposures or bites, or trauma to the skin with contaminated soil or rust. Additionally, identify any predisposing conditions such as diabetes, immunosuppression, or IBDU. On your examination, it's crucial to inspect the patient for any portals of bacterial entry. Necrotizing fasciitis can anatomically happen anywhere, with the most common locations being the lower extremities in 32%, upper limb in 24%, perineum in 16%, trunk 16%, and head or neck 10%. Look for any areas of skin mottling, erythema, soft tissue edema, and pain out of proportion to the presenting signs. It is important to note that often pain out of proportion on exam can occur before skin changes arise. If there are skin changes, there may be pain on palpation even beyond the erythematous borders, which separates neck fasc from cellulitis. Feel the skin for crepitus and subcutaneous emphysema, although this may be a late finding, along with purple discoloration, blistering, or bullae on the skin. If visible, outline the erythematous borders with a marker to visualize rapid progression of the infection more easily as you continue to reassess the patient. What about investigations? While necrotizing fasciitis is a clinical diagnosis, you can support your clinical suspicion with blood work and imaging. Don't forget that if you are suspicious, you should urgently call for a surgical consultation. Which service you specifically call depends on the site, but usually it would be one of orthopedics or general surgery, but also urology if there's concern for a Fournier's gangrene. Start your workup with two sets of blood cultures. Look for changes like a rise in white cell count, CRP, creatinine, and a drop in sodium and hemoglobin. An elevated CK will indicate that the infection is deep and involves muscle or fascia. Order a STAT contrast-enhanced CT of the area of interest. While it may show soft tissue edema, it can also show gas or air within the tissue, which can suggest the presence of anaerobic organisms. Acquiring a STAT X-ray can be an even faster way of identifying gas. While an MRI would typically aid in diagnosis, it is less readily available and would not be practical in this emergent setting. On to treatment. Treatment begins with stabilizing the patient, as per the ABCs. If required, provide supplemental oxygen and always assess the need for intubation based on their ability to maintain their airway. Provide hemodynamic support with IV fluids and inotropes if necessary. Involve intensive care and general surgery early in the patient's care. Ultimately, the mainstay of treatment of neck fasc is early administration of antibiotics and urgent surgical debridement for source control. Oftentimes, amputation may be necessary to achieve total source control and save the patient. Until debrided tissue is cultured or blood cultures result, prescribe empiric broad-spectrum therapy. Select your antibiotics based on potential causative organisms, the patient's allergies, and past organisms cultured from the patient. Your empiric therapy could include piperacillin-tazobactam, vancomycin, and clindamycin, or meropenem instead of piptazo. Either piptazo or meropenem will cover the gram-positives, gram-negatives, and anaerobic organisms. Vancomycin will provide MRSA coverage. Clindamycin is included when covering empirically for strep pyogenes. It functions based on the Eagle effect, in that clindamycin can kill strep pyogenes when in bacteriostatic phase and even at high inoculums, where in such cases penicillin might not be effective. Clindamycin is also able to reduce toxin production and disrupt the actions of interferons. It has also been shown to improve in-hospital mortality against strep pyogenes neck fasc. Remember that once your tissue culture or blood cultures result, you should narrow your therapy accordingly. On to our medicine minute. One adjunct to the treatment of neck fasc caused by invasive Group A strep is IVIG. Theoretically, IVIG can neutralize bacterial toxins and mitigate the body's overwhelming inflammatory response to infection in the event of toxic shock syndromes. However, its benefit in the treatment of neck fash is controversial. Specifically, there has not been enough convincing data from existing randomized controlled trials or observational studies to reliably confirm a clear mortality benefit of IVIG in patients with neck fash. The rarity of IGAS also adds to the challenge of conducting an RCT that can inform guidelines. Therefore, the IDSA has determined that there is insufficient evidence to recommend IVIG in neck fash management, and emphasizes that early broad-spectrum antibiotics, in addition to surgical debridement, remains the mainstay of treatment. Let's summarize quickly. While you may see a number of skin and soft tissue infections, always rule out necrotizing fasciitis through your clinical suspicion. Look for a rapidly progressing infection and the cardinal signs of necrotizing fasciitis: a toxic-looking patient with intense pain out of proportion to clinical findings, skin changes, and vital derangements. Cover with empiric antibiotics early and involve surgery for surgical debridement as soon as possible. All right, that's all for today. Thank you for listening to today's episode entitled Galloping Gangrene, An Approach to Necrotizing Fasciitis. This episode was written by Dr. Laurie Israelian, internal medicine resident, and reviewed by Dr. Eva Peasons, infectious diseases, and Dr. Jessica Nguyen, general internist. The Internet Work series is executively managed by Allison Lai, Zara Morali, and Leah Karyanopoulos. This episode is recorded and produced by Leah Karyanopoulos. Theme song music by Lakshmi Visanthamowan. As always, don't forget to check out www.theinternetwork.com for associated resources and infographics. Thank you for listening, and we hope to see you again soon.